And welcome to Hungry Dads, your guided tour through the delicate and often overwhelming balancing act between food indulgences and social acceptance. And now, as always, here are your hosts, Rod Budget and Hugh Gallen.
Hello, hello, and welcome to this week's show. I'm Rod Budget.
I'm Hugh Gallen.
I'm going to start my segment tonight with three words, and I'd like Hugh to let me know if it means anything to him. I think some of our listeners will know what I'm talking about. Some probably won't. Those three words are Meat Mountain Sandwich. Hugh, any idea?
Meat Mountain Sandwich. I've heard of this one. This is Arby's.
That is
this
correct.
This is Arby's. A sandwich. I saw it on the internet. I believe it potentially had every type of meat they offer on one sandwich. Looked just like an obnoxiously large amount of meat.
Can't get anything by this guy. He is correct. So yeah, this came out within the past few weeks. It's very new. Some of our listeners may have heard about it. It's kind of trickled into mainstream news. But for those who aren't familiar, Arby's announced recently that they are offering a $10 Meat Mountain Sandwich, which is not on the main menu. But they will make it for those who are kind of in the know and ask about it. So you might be wondering, Hugh alluded to it, but what exactly constitutes a mountain of meat? So the quick rundown is two chicken tenders, roast turkey, ham, Swiss cheese, corned beef, brisket, Angus steak, cheddar cheese, roast beef, of course, and bacon. So that is a mountain of meat. And I found it kind of humorous that there are two chicken tenders instead of one.
I think that's what pushes it over the boundaries of potential good, quote-unquote, good taste.
Yeah, were they, like, focus grouping this? Are there structural engineers at Arby's who are deciding two is better than one? It struck me as a little hackish, honestly, but we'll get back to that. So now that we've kind of gone over the ingredients, I thought this would be a good introduction to delve into the mysterious, controversial, and, sometimes misunderstood world of secret menu items. And then we'll bring it back full circle to the Meat Mountain Sandwich later. So even if you haven't heard of the Meat Mountain, our listeners are probably aware that, there are secret menu items out there. In-N-Out Burger kind of was the first to popularize this with the whole animal-style phenomenon. But I would think a lot of people would be surprised at the breadth of secret menu items out there. So, if just Google secret menu items, and you'll see that there are several specific blogs and websites kind of devoted to this. All the major chains are, purported to have secret menu items of some sort. So I think it's, something that we need to address at a higher level. So first of all, Hugh, I'd be interested to get your quick take on kind of the secret menu item phenomenon. Have you ordered a secret menu item before? And did you know that they kind of in mass existence? It's kind of the latest craze.
Yeah, I think I have ordered them from In-N-Out Burger, which you mentioned, animal style. I think that's probably one of the most predominant versions of the secret menu item. Secret menu items seemed more interesting when they were, in fact, secret. They seem to have hit the mainstream a little bit, and I'm not going to claim to have been an early adopter or an early in the know of these, but I do feel that they have hit a mainstream predominance that's made them less interesting.
Yeah, I agree with that. So I'm going to delve into, this is a little bit of a takeoff on our fast food reviews, but this is more of a review of kind of secret menu items in general and, kind of an editorial piece on how I feel about them and where they're going. So as you may have guessed by now, I'm not a big supporter of the secret menu craze for several reasons. First of all, it might seem a little weird, and I'm interested to get Hugh's take on this, but as some of our listeners may know, I have a marketing advertising background. So the first reason that I'm not a big fan is I'm a skeptic by nature. I think these are largely marketing schemes coming from corporate, some suits sitting in an office trying to think up, how can we drum up sales for XYZ? Using Arby's as an example, a little research shows that they've been trying to hammer home the point that they offer more than roast beef sandwiches. They've tried to diversify their menu over the past several years. Their mainstream marketing has been about this. They've got brisket, we're more than roast beef, probably because their roast beef is horrifying. They also have the oldest customer base in the fast food business, and they've been struggling. So, the story goes, there's a background on the Meat Mountain Sandwich. Supposedly, Arby's hung posters in its restaurants just depicting a huge mountain of meat. It didn't have any text on it. It was just trying to show visually that they have a lot of meat options. And theoretically, as the story goes, customers kept pointing at the poster and saying, I want that. Can you make that for me? What is that? So supposedly this made its way all the way back to Arby's corporate headquarters. Hey, people are looking at the posters and trying to order the sandwich. They say, okay, let's do it and charge $10, you know. And as an aside, $10 seems ridiculously cheap for the sandwich, by the way. It's looking like 50 cents per meat item. You know, so maybe I'm skeptical and I'm being a little harsh and it doesn't bother other people. It might be my kind of marketing background. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that this is definitely carefully timed, intentionally released secret menu item. Probably has a lot of research and development and marketing funding behind it. Basically, we're all sheep in Arby's Meat Mountain world. And not to pick just on Arby's, because I think this is true of many of the secret menu items out there across all the eating establishments. You know, they're trying to reach a new target market, trying to move items that didn't sell well by themselves. I don't know. Talk to me, Hugh. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on the sentiment. I'm going to disagree with you on the cynicism. We're in a brave new world now. This is the physical food manifestation of viral marketing. And we can say we don't like viral marketing, and we can not like viral marketing, but it is effective. It's proven to be effective. It's proven to be the way people want to receive messages and the way companies want to send those messages out nowadays. And I think true viral marketing can't be controlled. So in the environment of advertising, which I spent some time in too, this contrived viral marketing is here to stay. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you can look at it with a level of cynicism insofar as it's not really viral because it's been being pushed and right. Agenda being pushed. But I think it's arguably more enjoyable than the direct message push you get shoved down your throat through other methods. The right audience can receive it with a sense of belonging and a sense of value that one might not receive in the other way. So I agree with the sentiment, but I'm going to try to be less cynical about it.
No, I think that's a fair point. I am Generation X, getting older, and I think I'm probably just kind of becoming an old man and not liking all this crazy marketing stunts, but I think that's a fair point. My second and much larger concern is that there's really no consistency in secret menu availability and awareness across restaurant locations. This is really a huge issue for me. And not only across locations, but across the 16-year-old employees who are actually making the secret item. So in the Meat Mountain example again, Arby's has admitted that, and I quote, "The Meat Mountain is not available at all locations." So am I going to call up, you know, my local Arby's and say, "Hey, do you have the Meat Mountain?" Probably not. And it's not just about Arby's again. McDonald's supposedly has a land, sea, and air burger, beef, fillet of fish, and chicken all between a bun. So can you seriously envision me driving to my local McDonald's, you know, getting in the drive-through line, sandwiched between five or six minivans full of screaming kids, you know, rolling up to the speaker and belting out, "Yeah, give me a land, sea, and air with a medium Dr. Pepper." I mean, first I'd be looking at about 15 to 20 seconds of dead silence on the other end of the microphone. Super awkward, then confused pandemonium as they try to figure out if this is something they have, if I'm just playing a practical joke. They have to find a way to ring it up if the manager does know that it's a thing. What's the price of it? I use the drive-through example because it is more extreme, but even going in and ordering at the counter, I mean, that's not going to be any fun. You know, you're going to be staring at a pimply-faced teenager ordering some stupidly named thing, and even if they somehow know how to make it or know how to ring it up, you know, you're now the a-hole that ordered the stupid sandwich. And that's really the point. You're resented, you're labeled, you're targeted, and they're not going to forget you're that guy. I can't go back to that McDonald's, you know, in the near future. They're going to be like, "Oh, here he comes again," you know. Hugh, what do you think about that point? I think this is probably my biggest argument against secret menu items.
Your sentiment completely undermines the purpose of the secret menu item, which is for those who are in the know to utilize them to, for lack of a better term, to feel cool, to feel on the inside. And that's why the secret menu item seems like it has to be locational and regional and not a nationwide push or have the impression of a nationwide push. Because the whole point is that you walk in with the confidence that you're in on the same secret as the person across the counter. So it would make sense to me if at a locality there was a secret menu item based on the regional taste or based on maybe some crazy employee who thought this up and shared it with this person who shared it with that person, but to make it attempt at a mainstream creates exactly the kind of problem that you mentioned that undermines the entire purpose. On the other hand, if you make it so well known that one can confidently order it, then it's no longer a secret menu item.
That's the balancing act. I mean, I guess it's on the food chains, you know, it's their onus to train their people and make sure they know how to make all their secret food items without letting it leak out too much. So yeah, I think I agree with you there.
But I think that's impossible. Because once they've trained their entire staff to do it and made it a legitimate part of the menu, even if it's not up on the board, I think the level of secrecy goes so far down that it becomes part of the corporate machine and it loses its panache.
I see what you're saying. I think ideally, if I could have, you know, if say I liked a Big Mac with Filet-O-Fish instead of the beef, and I had a relationship with my boy Jerry down at the local McDonald's, and he'd hook me up with it. I think that is the ideal secret food item.
I've done a little bit of research on the secret food item, and I'm not sure. I mean, I don't have access to the corporate meetings, say, of a place like I think it was Friendly's. They had there was news of a secret menu item with fried pickles. Was that Friendly's?
That sounds familiar, yes.
And what I understand it to be was they have pickles available at their, you know, their fixins bar, and you can ask them to throw some pickles in the fryer, and they'll do it at the price of your French fries or whatever. And that seems, from what I read, the corporate headquarters has not recognized that as a menu item. However, there are locations that will do that knowingly without a question. I think that's a legitimate secret menu item because the people who want it and the people who offer it are on the same page outside of the corporate system.
I think it's a more seamless secret menu item. I don't know if it's an actual secret menu item, which I'll expound on in a little bit. It also sounds like a potential health code violation, which is a whole other topic. With people scooping out pickles from the bar and throwing it behind the counter. I would be curious to try it, though. So going back to my gripes about secret menu items, this is the most practical one. Generally, these items just don't appeal to me. They don't look tasty to me. And if they were really good, they'd be on the real menu, because people would actually order them and want them. A mountain of Arby meat does not appeal to me, you know, even on some sort of teenage nostalgia level. Gravy on fries, okay, I can see that. An extra beef patty or two, maybe. If it's just kind of adding a little twist, I can see it. But when you start getting into, like, onion rings dipped in the hot fudge and stuffed inside fish, or just being ridiculously crazy, not so much. I think, in general, the secret items just don't appeal to me on a taste level. And I see where some people might enjoy out-of-the-ordinary things, so it's for them. Maybe this goes back to my cynicism, but I think largely it's just kind of a shock value tactic.
I want to talk very quickly about the meat mountain in particular. I just had two thoughts on it I have to get out of my system. And the first one you alluded to, which was the sandwich technicians who were looking at this thing. I think you do have significant structural issues with that much meat and then with the chicken tenders on top of it.
In the few reviews that I have seen thus far, that was a big complaint, that it is just impossible to eat as a sandwich. It just comes apart and you end up eating it with a fork.
Now, the other thing that struck me before you mentioned the chicken tenders, I was imagining, I think this, I don't know if this is unique to New York or not, but there are some delis that are renowned for their sandwiches here in New York. Brisket, roast beef, and turkey. And they're part of their shtick is that they pile it high. You get, you know, three and a half inches of meat inside two pieces of rye bread. And it is inevitably not an edible sandwich in most ways. But it is a very, very popular format for eating. And I was about to say, you know what, kudos to Arby's for kind of emulating what I think to be an interesting, unique regional sandwich style. But then when you threw the chicken tenders on, for me, it lost all of its class.
Yeah, that's a great point, and I couldn't agree more. It's no longer a sliced kind of beef-based sandwich. It's got chicken tenders thrown on top.
And hack, like you said.
It's classless, really. It's just classless. So my final point with secret menu items is, how secret are these? It's basically taking ingredients that are already in the restaurant and just combining them in different ways or giving you an inordinate amount of them. So I would get behind a secret menu item that was truly new and unexpected rather than kind of rehashing what's already on hand. So, you know, fried parrot at Burger King, I'm all in. Turtle soup, Sonic, why not, you know? Maybe something like this exists, I'm unaware. But maybe that means it's really a true secret menu item out there. So if any of our listeners, you're aware of a secret menu item that involves an ingredient that is not on the regular menu. But if any of our listeners are aware of a truly secret item that is something just unexpected and out of the ordinary for the food establishment, send us a tweet. We'd love to know about it. In closing out this segment, Hugh, I'd like to propose that next week we each pick a secret menu item from an eatery of our choice and try to order it. Report on the outcome next week. What do you have to say about that?
I accept the mission.
Hungry Dad!
So, I want to start with a question. Do you keep snacks in the house on a regular basis? This whole show focuses on snacks, but we don't necessarily talk about eating in the house. What's the situation for snacks in your house?
There are not snacks in the house. I would say on average there is one kind of snack item at a time that I know is, you know, either in the fridge or the freezer or the pantry. We certainly don't have endless bottles of soda or big bags of chips on a regular basis. We keep it pretty healthy, honestly, because, you know, if I have something in front of me, I'm going to eat it. I'm going to eat it in bulk. I'm going to binge eat it. If I had a huge bag of Doritos in the cabinet, it would be gone within 12 hours, probably. So I'd say, you know, there's usually something around, whether it be super unhealthy or not, yogurt, frozen yogurt, for example, or maybe, you know, some nuts, some cashews, things like that. There's generally not snack items. I know some people, some families have, you know, that place in the pantry where they know they can go and there's a shelf dedicated to just snack food. That is not the case in the budget household.
Right. And in our house, it's kind of similar. We both are families with children, and I think rightly so, the weekly shopping needs to reflect the options for those, for the entire household, including the kids. And so I have opportunities to snack on what's available for the kids. Graham crackers and various kinds of crackers and snacks, but not chips and soda, not the extreme snacking food that is really considered bad for you. Let me ask you, do you pilfer the kids' snacks from
Absolutely.
Time to time?
It's really, I mean, it's become my snacks as well. So like you said, we have healthy type crackers. Whole grain crackers have become tasty. You know, I mean, if you think back in college days, I would not touch whole grain crackers with a 10-foot pole. I would never consider them a treat or a snack. But that just shows, you know, things change. And now I see the crackers up there, I'm like, all right, you know, whole grain crackers, I'm going to get three, and hopefully no one will notice.
And that's exactly it. So you've got access to these crackers, but you do have to regulate your intake, because if you're not going to tear through an entire box early in the week.
And that's kind of the beauty of it, because I really don't want to tear through, you know, 20 crackers at a time, because, I mean, they're fine, they taste okay, but it's not like sucking down 2 gallons of soda or eating some delicious cheesy Doritos. Whole grain crackers, you know, I'll take a few, but I'm not going to sit there and pour the box into my mouth while crumbs dribble off my chin.
So this snack hack segment is really to help guys like us in our situation where we don't have the snacks in the house, how we can cope with that. And the first very simple trick is there are access to the kids' snacks, but that's not always going to get you where you need to be on any given night. So I have two particular tips to maybe get yourself through a snacking need when you don't have an opportunity for the covert snacking. Maybe there's no good snacks in the house, and maybe the kids' snacks, you can't take enough of them that's going to really satisfy what you need. So the first one is simply this piece of advice. There's no soda in the house. You still want something sweet to drink. I recommend having lemonade as an option. And you do that under the premise of looking like you're buying healthy things by buying a bag of lemons. You want lemons for flavored water, for unsweetened iced tea, and you have those lemons in the house. You can very easily make a lemonade out of it, kind of without anybody even noticing. It can be as satisfying as soda. You throw some sugar in there. Sugar's a pantry item that isn't tracked as significantly.
True, true. Now, what's the shelf life of a lemon? Will those keep for a while?
If you buy a full bag of lemons, those should last for a couple of weeks at least. I keep them in the fridge. They're relatively inexpensive. They're going to last longer than a bottle of soda. They're going to be less obvious as a junk food item on your grocery list, in your grocery basket, and in your refrigerator. And so just being able to fashion some of that lemonade will fill in the soda gap. In theory, it's cheaper. In theory, you can regulate the sugar usage. But honestly, when I make it with a lot of sugar. The real value there is that you have access to a good soda substitute without having to buy soda, have soda in your house, suddenly have a big discussion about whether or not there's soda in your house. I don't know about you, Rod. Since the kids, there really hasn't been any option of having soda in the house on a regular basis.
Absolutely not an option. Don't even bring it up. I mean, personally, I don't want it in the house. You know, I know it's for the best. There are times when I wish I could go in and just chug a 2-gallon Mountain Dew, but it's for the best for all of us.
My other snack hack might be a little more unorthodox, and it's this. You're there, you're at home, there's no chips around, you can't access the kids' snacks, maybe because you don't want to use them all up, or maybe they're not available, but there might be some pantry items that you can use to fashion something that could qualify as a pretty wonderful snack, and it's this. You take some Cheerios, maybe Chex Mix, or Chex, rather, and just take them and put them in the microwave with a little pat of butter. That butter will melt, and you give it a couple stirs, maybe a couple shakes every 20 seconds, and add some garlic salt, and before you know it, you've essentially got Chex Mix. This can be cobbled together from what you already have without, again, these are pantry items that are presumably healthy, that aren't going to show up on the grocery list as a bad snack.
Right, the Cheerios and Chex are probably, you know, quote-unquote another kid's snack that you're just kind of repurposing for your own adult pleasure.
And the absence of them isn't going to be noticed nearly as significantly. I enjoy butter. I know there's polarizing feelings about the use of butter like this. Is this the kind of snack you think you would try, melting some butter on Cheerios?
I've actually never thought of it, but as you were describing it, it was sounding quite delicious, so I would certainly not be opposed to trying it out. It's kind of popcorn for the hungry dad, you know. It's kind of the dad popcorn.
Now, I will say, I've been doing this for years, actually, but I hadn't done it in a while. I started doing it in the last several months, and I thought it was one of the values of it was that it was going, I guess, unnoticed, uncharted, untracked amongst my wife's, you know, interest in my snacking habits. And it turns out I was wrong in this respect. You know, on any given day, we keep, you know, 4 sticks of butter in the house, and they're not expected to go particularly fast. But I think the butter usage got amped up and noticeable. Now, what's interesting is what my wife put together as a theory. I can't blame her for asking the question, but she asked me point blank whether or not I had been dipping potato chips in the butter.
Hungry Dad.
Okay, I want to wrap up for myself this evening with a corn chip review. Not one, but 2 reviews in a segment I'm going to call Corn Chip versus Corn Chip. The two contestants I have, the first one I have here with me tonight, and it is Jeff Foxworthy's Southern Creations Original Grit
Wow.
Chips. Have you ever heard of these?
First of all, did you obtain those in the greater New York City metropolitan?
No, these were shipped in. My dear mother was in town to visit her grandchildren, and she always comes with lots of treats, and this came up from Southern Florida.
That would have been my guess.
Now, just to give you some background on Jeff Foxworthy's Southern Grit Chips, it says on the back, growing up in the Foxworthy family, you could always count on 2 things, good times and great food. Dad was a legendary barbecue chef. In fact, every family gathering that I can remember, the focus was food. Heck, we even have a running joke that if you ask Uncle Earl how to get to the stadium, he will take you on a 15-mile tour of every restaurant on the way. So when one of my Yankee buddies told me he'd created the brand new grit chip, I had to try it. And once I did, I just had to be a part of it. Today I'm all in, and Jeff Foxworthy's original grit chips are ready to sweep the nation. So jump right in and try ya a handful. I'm thinking you'll just love their crunchy sweet grit taste just as much as I do. Enjoy, Jeff Foxworthy.
They're very concise. That's what I like about them.
Now, I love trying chips I've never had before. When I went on my honeymoon, I eagerly swept Spain for any kind of chip flavor or brand I'd never tried before. So when these showed up in my house, I was pretty excited to give them a try. Now, I've already tried them. I already have my review in mind, but I'm going to taste one right now just to make sure that I have a very fresh feeling of what I think of these. Yeah. So again, these are Jeff Foxworthy's Original Grit Chips. So this tastes like a corn chip. Nothing more, nothing less.
No grit flavoring whatsoever.
It's a corn grit base, looking at the ingredients.
It makes sense because grits are flavorless by nature. You know, you put butter in them, or brown sugar, or shrimp. But by themselves, I think grits are, they don't have much flavor.
So I can appreciate Mr. Foxworthy's attempt at a new angle on the chip, calling it a grit chip, and maybe even including some grits. But if I handed you this and told you it was a Frito, I'm not sure you would even question it. So I'm not saying I'm giving it a negative review. It tastes fine as a corn chip. But as far as a new type of chip, a new grit chip that could fill a new category, it doesn't succeed. It's a corn chip, plain and simple.
The real question is, would you go out and buy that on your own now?
I would not. No. Any more than I would go out and buy some Fritos. So it's not to say they're bad, but they don't do anything special. I was anxious to taste something new, and I simply didn't. Our second contender up for analysis tonight is Doritos Dynamite. I saw these at the local grocer on an errand that I was on for my wife, and so this acquisition would definitely have qualified as a covert snacking opportunity. What these are, they are Doritos brand. They are a tightly rolled tube of corn chip. Take a Dorito and turn it into a tube, but not just a tube, but a tightly rolled tube, so that you're getting, in the roll, two or maybe even three layers of that Dorito.
It sounds appealing. Is it flavored?
The two flavors that were available, and this is where it would definitely lose points, is the only flavors available. It's branded as Dynamite or Dinomito, which I think is the Mexican translation or Spanish. They're hot flavors, chili limon and queso gigante or something. Gigante.
So gigante.
It was all spicy. It was all hot, which I'm okay with, but it's generally not my first choice as a chip. The good side is this is a fantastic shape for a chip. There's a lot of density and a lot of crunch in each bite. I stand by the format very, very strongly. The flavors, again, I'd love to see this roll out in a cheese, in a cool ranch. I think it'd be an absolute hit. The most interesting thing about these to me was that when I looked at the packaging, I saw what was obvious Doritos branding. But up in the right-hand corner, there was a little logo. And the logo said Sabritas. I thought I'd seen that before. Now, I live in the New York metro area, and sometimes I will go into a place, what we call a bodega here, which is a small shop with food, snacks, groceries. It's not a grocery store in like a supermarket style. And oftentimes these have an ethnically based owner. So if you go into one in a Hispanic neighborhood or owned by a Hispanic owner, you'll see snacks that are their origins are from different countries. And I thought I'd seen Sabritas before, and in fact, I was right. You can find Sabritas brand chips in some of these Hispanic bodegas. I thought I had even had this shape of chip before, and in fact, I had. So what I realized was Sabritas has this style of chip available in all different flavors. You just don't find it as ubiquitously as you do the Dorito. What was also interesting, this seeing the Doritos logo with the Sabritas logo, I compelled me to come home and do some research. And it turns out Sabritas is a brand in Mexico, a chip brand that was acquired by Frito-Lay in 1966. No, I'm sorry. Yeah, 1966. And they essentially maintained the styles that Sabritas had, but then also layered on top their own and branded in Mexico as Sabritas. So if you buy Ruffles in Mexico, they're going to be under the Sabritas brand instead of the Frito-Lay brand. Now, I haven't done extensive research, but what I thought was interesting here was this is a reversal of that. They took the style that was predominant in the Sabritas brand and brought it into the Doritos brand. I think this is a smart move. I'd like to see this dynamite shape and become more ubiquitous amongst the Doritos brand. It gets an A from me as far as shape, and I think it adds something unique, whereas surprisingly grit chips added nothing. So in this corn chip versus corn chip, I'm giving it to the corporate entity here. I would love to give it to the burgeoning young brand, but I'm giving it to Doritos, Frito-Lay and Sabritas. Well done.
Which sometimes happens. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's interesting that Dinamitas, they've only gone with kind of the spicy Hispanic flavor. I'm assuming that there aren't more traditional flavors.
No, these are the only two I've found. I did a little research and it looks like these are the main flavors. It also seems that perhaps the reason that they're only coming in these flavors is that they're part of what Doritos is calling the bold flavor experiment, which is another of these. It alludes to what we talked about before in marketing, that they're clearly trying to get a kind of a grassroots, underground, viral, passionate fan of their chips with their bold flavor experiment, which maybe is probably worthy of an entire podcast of its own. But they're looking to have this extreme segment of their brand and of their fan base. And I think the hot flavors are probably the perfect fit for that.
Well, it's shaped like dynamite, so it kind of goes hand in hand. But who knew a dynamite-shaped chip would be so perfect? Logically, when you think about a tightly rolled dynamite-shaped chip, it just makes sense to me.
A plus to Sabritas and Doritos.
Hungry Dads!
Visit our website at hungrydads.com. Follow us on Twitter at hungry_dads. This has been a Hungry Dads production.